Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 401.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we take a little Persian New Year vacation. Folks, as you listen to this, I will be with my parents in Southern California, being very Iranian, because that's what we do during Persian New Year. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, the very Iranian Nagin Farsad. But do not worry, because we have a couple of segments of the show that we have been saving for this very moment to share with you. First up, we've got David Cross and Sina Ghaznavi discussing how to channel your anger. It's a fun chat. Take a listen. Next topic, we're going to talk about anger. And to join me in doing just that is the host of the utterly delightful podcast, Fraudsters. It's Sina Ghaznavi. Hey, Sina.
Hello, hello.
We're also joined by iconic comedian and podcast host of the show, Senses Working Overtime. It's the wonderful David Cross. Hey, David Cross.
Hi.
So that's just what he sounds like, you guys. You didn't know. That's his normal talking voice. So according to a new study in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, anger is actually more helpful at motivating people to overcome obstacles and meet their goals than a neutral emotional state. Now, before we get into it, I was wondering, what is your relationship with anger? Because I remember like in my teen years, and in my early 20s, just like being more generally like driven to anger. And then it just sort of like died away or something and like it became something more constructive. I don't know. But I actually like had more like anger issues when I was a little bit younger. What is your relationship with anger, Sina?
Yeah, so I used to be the hothead in the family, mm-hmm. which I resented vehemently because I think I was just well adjusted. And I guess I had a temper growing up. And I actually got great advice from Colin Quinn when I started stand up when I was younger. And he was like, write about what makes you angry. And I was already kind of doing that naturally, but it makes sense. Like you take that anger, it shows you something, it flashes a light on something that you think is wrong. And then you put it through your comedic lens. And really, though, after decades of therapy, I've realized that like anger is just your body telling you that a boundary's been crossed. And that's like a signal for yourself to be like, hey, let's take a minute and understand that this is not okay with me. I'm going to have a conversation with whoever this is doing. I'm going to be able to reflect on why this makes me angry. Again, that's a lot of copays later, but I'm in a much better place now.
David, what's your relationship with anger?
You know, I definitely have it, and I've been called or accused of being an angry comic. But it's about what you get angry about. You know, I think that's the the real nut to crack is and we've all been somewhere where you see somebody screaming at somebody else because they didn't get their order right or just awful behavior.
And they're
angry. And I don't know. It's about the things that I can't control, what's that dumb little, it's not dumb, but the platitude of the God grant me the strength.
Right, of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Oh, is that it? Yeah.
I think so. God grant me the strength
grant me the strength to.
Hold on.
It's about, the things that you can't control.
To accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, that's great. Those are wise words. Yeah.
You know, so the interesting thing about this study is I basically, you know, put a lot of these kids in situations that would make them angry to see what would happen.
How? Give me an example. I want to know about that. How did they make these little kids angry?
So, like, I think these teenager, like, college age people were shown videos of, like, I think they're Texas A&M students, and they were shown videos of, like, people defaming their school flag and stuff like that. Just, like, you know, getting at the, like, their sort of, like, patriotism towards their school, and that would get them really riled up. And in that state of being angered, they would solve more puzzles. So that's funny. They would solve more puzzles than the control group. Another interesting thing is, like, they rigged a game, some sort of computer game, and to make it really impossible to win, which made them really angry. And in those moments, they actually ended up moving faster and their reaction time increased because the anger was, they were so riled up with anger, it actually ended up making them faster.
Man, boy, what a dumb study.
I'm definitely going to make my wife slap me in the face before I do the New York Times crossword puzzle from now on.
So the study's authors, one of the study's authors, Dr. Heather Lynch, she basically said that, you know, one of her findings is that constant positivity is not really good and that, quote, there's more and more evidence that it's actually a life that's balanced by a mix of emotions that seems to be more satisfying and positive long term. Does that sound right to you? Do you feel like a mix of emotions is more generally motivating or good in the long term?
Well, you don't want to be angry all the time. So in that aspect, yeah, sure.
Yeah, right.
But wait till some corporate CEOs learn about this. Well, you know, we gotta make our.
You know, totally.
Just going to make everyone angry. Yeah. Wait, I just want to say one thing. David, I don't think you're an angry comedian. I think Seinfeld is an angry comedian. That's what people, you know, they'll think Seinfeld is rage-filled. All those things, the subtext is rage, first of all.
But okay. he presents it like irritation.
Right. It's all
so
a scam.
It comes off less.
But it's rage.
Yeah. But
we all see it, though, right?
Point.
We see it.
Yeah,
right?
I do see your point.
And I think about MJ, Michael Jordan. You ever see the Last Dance?
Oh, he that guy make, seems like he could have some
He
anger.
Would make up stories in his mind to get beef
to get
with another player just to get angry. And then he'd put up like 60 plus points. That is exhausting to me. Just thinking about that is exhausting.
Who's the comic that like doesn't pee so that when they're performing, they feel like they have to pee and it makes them a better comedian?
Is that David Cross? Is that David?
That makes no sense to me. I don't understand.
I want to say it's like, I don't know if it's Chris Rock, but I want to say it's like Chris Rock, I think.
That's crazy.
But there's something, I mean, that's not, I guess, having to pee. It's just like suffering makes you a better comedian in that scenario.
It's distracting, and it's also,
it gets you out of your head.
It's also like, the only reason I would do that is to ensure that I did my time and I didn't go over, you know?
Have you ever done that? That you've like, let me not pee so I don't run the clock?
No.
Since you're one of America's great stand-up comedians, let's ask you a couple of questions here. What little tricks of the trade do you use? If it's not holding in a pee, what do you use?
For what? For
to get out of your head on stage or whatever. Like whatever. Like, do you have any like little weird things? Do you have an MJ thing that you do? Do you make up, you know?
I find before every show, I will scope out the audience and I'll find one person that I'm like, I wanna fuck that person. And then and then it makes me do. No, I don't have any. There's no. I don't know. It's just. I don't know. It's just, you know, decades of doing it gives you the. I don't have any tricks, I guess.
Well, I remember early on when I was doing stand-up. For some reason, I had one of these sliding scale therapists because obviously I couldn't afford a full-fledged therapist. And I was telling him that I had a great set and I couldn't figure out why, because it was a night with the two, I did the same exact set in two locations. I couldn't figure out why one of them didn't work and one of them did, whatever. And so he made me like go through each scenario to figure out what it was. And on one of them, I was running late. So I basically ran on stage. Mm. Like I ran into the bar, or whatever it was, club. And then I ran on stage and did my set. And it was so, and that's the set that killed. And he was just like, oh, you can't have very much time to stew backstage. And that actually stuck with me forever because I was like, oh yeah, I fucking hate stewing in the green room. If I'm by myself in a green room, nightmare. Like I need there to be other comics there. So I'm not just constantly thinking about like, oh, what am I going to say, you know, or whatever.
I hear you on that. I have been asked by a headliner that I was opening for in the green room to stop pacing before the show, because I was just pacing back and forth, stewing and brooding, like what have, and like self talking, like what did, why did you do this? What have you done to yourself? What are you gonna do?
Right, totally. So the last thing I'll say about this anger thing, the experts say in order to use anger wisely, they say to set a healthy goal. And I thought this one was really interesting. They say, for example, when you're arguing with a spouse, your goal shouldn't be to win the argument, but it should be to like strengthen the relationship. If that's your goal, it's okay to have like a yelly, like argument, you know, intense argument, as long as the goal is something good. So to argue, and that'll help you argue with them constructively. And I feel like a lot of people go into arguments trying to win. Mm-hmm. And so changing that felt like, I don't know, a light bulb went off for me of just like, oh yeah, what if the goal isn't to win?
Yeah.
I think if you want to win an argument, you should not get married. just a wrap.
Any final thoughts on anger?
You know, I'm a big fan of his early work.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's David Cross holding in a pee. All right, that is the end of the show. What a fucking utter delight the two of you have been there. I mean, I'm so glad we're going into the holidays with this episode. Thank you so much. I want the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Sena, where do they do that?
You can find me at Sena Now, SEENOW, on Threads and Instagram. Please don't X me. I'm trying to leave that hellscape. And then check out Fraudsters anywhere you listen to podcasts.
David Cross, where do they find you?
OfficialDavidCross.com. And again, I have the podcast Census Working Overtime, which drops every Thursday on the same network, HeadGum, or where, I don't know how it works, but you where you listen to podcasts. There.
And everyone should be subscribing to that show. It's so wonderful and it's so unusual. And it is really, truly a creation from David Cross that you'll love. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for our next segment. It's a wonderful discussion between Danielle Derschlag and Dr. Laurel Breitman on how many books you're reading. Spoiler, I feel like I wasn't reading very many. Tell me how you do. And next topic. Today I'm joined by the wonderful artist and filmmaker Danielle Derschlag. Hey, Danielle.
Hey, Nagin.
I'm also joined by New York Times bestselling author and director of the Writing and Storytelling Program at Stanford School of Medicine. It's Dr. Laurel Breitman. Hey, Laurel.
Hi.
So today, we're going to talk a little bit about book reading because I have some really, I don't know, are they shocking? They might be shocking. But there was a recent YouGov poll that came out that basically pointed out that 46% of American adults finished zero books last year. 5% read just one. And so if you read more than two books in 2023, you're in officially in the top half of U.S. adults. So, I mean, how many books did you guys read? Here's some, there's some time for really just laying it all bare. Okay, you guys. How many books did you read last year? And did these numbers surprise you?
I don't keep track of how many books I read per year, so I can't give a specific number, sadly.
But was it more than two?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm usually reading a book.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
Like, I generally am reading a book. It's a huge part of my life. It's a huge part of my social life, too, that we talk about books, share book recommendations. I love a book club. I love a theme book club. Oh, you know, it's a big part of my life, but I have to say I was less surprised than I wish I was. And part of the reason for that is something I struggle with, even though I read a lot of books, which is that this fucking phone
in my hand, not only,
you know, is constantly summoning me, beckoning me toward its awfulness, but also I'll speak for myself, honestly and vulnerably, it's changed my attention span.
Yeah.
It used to be that sitting and reading a book for 3 hours was not unusual for me. I have to work now to really put that time aside. So, you know, I think our brains are changing because of recent technology. How much time we feel comfortable spending on one thing is getting shorter and shorter. We see this in film. We see it everywhere. And I do notice that. It's, you know, it's a harder job to put that time aside. So even though I do it, I find it less easy than I used to.
Laurel, I mean, you've written books. How many books do you read? Are books a part of your daily life?
Absolutely. I was so depressed by this news. You know, it makes me want to start an OnlyFans or something. Maybe I could read on the OnlyFans.
Sign me up.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's the way.
I love that idea. Like,
yes. You know? But I, because that's going to pay me more if this is the future than actually writing books. truly. But, you know, yeah, I've read, like you, Danielle, I don't count. So I'm not sure. I too am always reading a book. And like you, oh my God. Like it's like a physical itchy feeling. It's like an itch I need to scratch if I read for too long and my phone is across the room. I have to play tricks on myself. I have to move the phone. I have to put it in an airplane. And I've noticed my reading habits have changed. Like I don't have as much patience anymore for like a slow burn, super dry storyline that's lacking a lot of tension. I'm like, give me the TikTok version of literature, which I now hate about myself, but it's where we are. Like I can't read even the books like I once read unless I'm doing it for research for something. Mm. Unless it's part of my quote unquote job. Like if I'm reading for something I need to write about, then I can read something that's, you know, drier. But if we're talking about reading for fun and pleasure, like what I read has changed, what I look for in a story has changed, and absolutely my time, my attention span has changed, which I find really frustrating because I never signed up for this.
Same.
Oh, it's okay. So you guys actually, I think, are doing such a tremendous job and that books are still a really regular part of your life. I am going to be the stand-in for the rest of America because I probably read 3 books last year. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'd love to say, I mean, I was never a huge reader. And I think part of my problem, my particular problem, which I think probably resonates with some of the listeners, is that I am a news junkie.
Yeah.
So where a book takes up your time, I am using that time on a deep dive about the fucking economy of Denmark, you know, because of Novo Nordisk or whatever. And I just get really swept up by that stuff. And so then I find myself, and I want to say that news is a terrible way to spend your time. I have this podcast, so I need to know a couple of things, right? I need to be able to have a general understanding of a lot of stuff happening in the political world and in the cultural world. And I think, I hope, whatever listeners can fucking dump on me later, but like I try to do that and have a decent grasp on all of those things. But it definitely, I used to really revel in a good novel. Like I'm not trying to like read a lot of nonfiction because I feel like my whole day is news junkie nonfiction. But I used to really get into a novel, and now I'll like give a novel a couple of chapters and I'll be like, this isn't grabbing me, and it's over, you know? So I have a graveyard. So it's like I completed a few books, but I have a graveyard of like other of books that I only gave a few couple of chapters and didn't complete. And I wonder, like, if I had completed them, was that, is one of those books like the best book I've ever read in my entire life? And I'm never going to know. You know what I mean? Because I just didn't have the patience to get
through it.
You know what? Probably not. Probably not.
I just feel like your book is going to grab you. It's like we're saying, like, your taste has changed too. You just might not have admitted it yet. You know, like, there's probably some stuff out there that is going to grab you. You just might, you know, not have stumbled into that like news junkie softcore romanticy section.
Right. Yeah. Which is totally, that's my next genre.
Yeah. You might not be shopping for the right stuff.
I have actually like a magnet up in my work studio that's a John Waters quote that I love. And the quote is, if you go home with someone and they don't have books, don't fuck them.
Such good advice.
Such good advice because part of, I think, why that quote really resonates with me, you know, obviously I'm an old person, I'm 43, but at this age, I can say when in my 20s, when I was dating, you know, a whole slew of ne'er-do-wells, part of how I figured out who sort of seemed like a good idea was looking at their bookcase. You know, what titles compelled them? Were there books somewhere? I think it's a bummer to me. I still love a physical book. I don't know about you too, but like if I'm going to read a book, I want it to be physical. I find it much more satisfying. And it's kind of a bummer to me that we don't have as much of a culture where you can see people's reading appetite publicly displayed in the home, because a lot of folks just do it on some kind of device. I also think it's a beautiful way to communicate who you are in your space.
It's funny because I have a graduate degree in African American studies, and so whenever these dudes would come over to fuck me, they would just be like, "You have like a lot of Baldwin," and you know what I mean. And I was like, "Yeah." I mean, it's like, and it's funny because I still have a lot of that stuff. It's like my thing just still reflects that I went to grad school, and then it just sort of stopped. And then there's like, you know, novels, and then it's like, it's so ridiculous. I was going to say, Danielle, to your point, 42% of us actually still read physical books, compared to 22% who read digital books and 19% who read audio books. So digital books, you know, I think, you know, you'll be happy to know we're still not the, you know, the creme de la creme of the reading experience. Now, let me ask you guys about audio books. Does it count if you heard the book?
I say yes. And listen, if only if we got to get more people reading. So I don't think we are in the position to discount any form of book consumption personally. And the money goes into the author's pocket and the publisher's pocket. I mean, they're sitting there, they're consuming the story. I think they count. That's just my vote.
I absolutely agree. And interestingly, I'm curious if other people have this, but I choose different kinds of books for my audiobooks. Like my audiobooks tend to be like a juicy celebrity memoir. I know I'm going to be on an airplane. Like I think of them more as kind of candy for me. I absolutely believe that it counts. Any form of reading that speaks to you is right. But here's my question about it. It's a grammar question. Do you say, I read the book?
Yeah.
Do you say, I heard the book? That is still a thing.
That's
still
an issue. Yeah.
Yes,
I mean,
people
here is
do
the thing,
a qualifier.
It feels, I think the thing, there's something about audiobooks that makes me feel like you're getting away with something because you could do your laundry. You know what I mean? And that's right. Like, hey, come on. You're not supposed to be able to fucking do your laundry. Like, I get a little, but at the same, but also, I want to also say, that with this wonderful voice of mine, I've actually narrated 7 audiobooks. So like I'm actually in the, like, yes. I obviously, and there is something like, there is like a Zen state that I enter, like having, and I also narrated my own book that I wrote. What's sad is there's gonna be a point where I will have written more books in a year than I read. but I do think there's like a Zen state as a narrator that I enter, like doing that job, that's like oddly satisfying. And I think that like if you are an audiobook consumer and you're listening, I'm not saying I'm any good at it, but like if there's narrators that you find are like good, I think it kind of puts you in a state and maybe helps your mood and maybe helps your relaxation. Like there's something that can happen there that's not necessarily going to happen when you're reading yourself. And also I remember talking to someone at Audible, the company that does a lot of audiobooks, obviously, and they were saying to me that storytelling, like verbal storytelling, is much, 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 much older than writing. Yes. Right? You know this anthropologically, Laurel, and so there's something very human about hearing a book, about hearing a story, and it goes to, and it's so much more human than actually reading, which is something that we all had to learn. It's not intuitive. So I talked myself into really giving audiobook people a nice long leash. Keep doing what you're doing. Let's just end this. Is there like on a quick recommendation, is there anything you're reading right now that you think people should read?
Oh yeah. I just finished yesterday a novel called Rouge, and it's sort of like dark fairy tale meets Eyes Wide Shut meets feminism. I enjoyed it.
Ooh, okay. Laurel, that sounds great.
I have a nonfiction recommendation, and full disclosure, I am only on the first page, so I can't quite yet say how good it is, but I'm really interested in the topic. It's All in Her Head by Dr. Elizabeth Cohen, and it's a narrative nonfiction book about women's pain.
Oh wow.
I'm excited.
I am currently reading a book that so far I've not thrown it out. It's called The Midcoast by author Adam White. And I got it because I was just chatting with a barista and they were selling some books at this coffee shop. And I was like, any of these books any good? And she was like, that Midcoast one had me pretty gripped. And I was like, great. And I just bought it and then started reading it. So it was like this really random, like why, how, anyways. So that's Midcoast is my suggestion. And folks, hit me up if you have any suggestions. I would love to hear them. I'm always looking for just like a novel, a beach read that isn't super dumb, that'll like a minorly literary beach read, not too literary, minorly literary. All right, hit me up. And folks, that is the end of the show. And my God, how much do I love potting with the two of you? I love it so much. And what I want is for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to find you and all the works that you do. Danielle, where do they do that?
Wonderful to be here as always, Nagin. You can find me at DanielleDerschlag.com. And I'm also on Instagram occasionally I'm at ddurch, D-D-U-R-C-H.
Follow her. She's got incredible images. I mean, really, she does incredible art. You should follow everything that she does. And Laurel, where do people find you?
At laurelbraitman.com. And they can find me on Instagram. It's pretty much the only social media I do now. Laurel_Braitman, B-R-A-I-T-M-A-N.
And can you remind us of the name of your book?
Absolutely. What Looks Like Bravery, an epic journey from loss to love. And it's everywhere books are sold. And I did the audiobook.
Hey!
So not as sexily as you would have done, but I did do it.
And that, my friends, is the end of the show. Happy Persian New Year, because I'm sure, you know, your coworkers aren't gonna wish you one, which they should. I hope you're having a fantastic start of the spring, and you know where to find me and all the things I do. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok, and you can subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/Nagin Farsad, and you can support the show at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. We would love it if you join us. We have some really fun bonus episodes that we release as part of your patronage of the show at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. Otherwise, if you have any thoughts, questions, anything at all, you can reach us at faiththenationpodcast@gmail.com. And otherwise, we'll be back in your earballs next week. That was a HeadGum Podcast.